Right here. Okay. Let's take a minute or so to just settle in, connect. As we begin this evening, there's a couple of quotes I wanted to share with you. One of them that I sent out fairly recently, I think to everybody who's been on our list, but it strikes me as being quite important because I have a tendency to be attracted to the negative side of things. To look at what's missing rather than what's there. And I think psychologically that's been a defense mechanism for me. It's almost like if you predict the worst and it doesn't happen, well, you know, you're a little bit relieved. And if it does happen, you've been kind of ready for it. I call that being a realist, although it's not really true. In fact, that was before I learned that my thoughts and my imagination are really creating the reality that I'm living in. And so if I get myself in that place of predicting the worst, without realizing it, I'm creating the worst. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, this one just really struck me as being tremendously important. It's from an old Ram Dass book called Compassion in Action. Mm-hmm. He says this, just as billions of tiny acts of ignorance, greed, violence, and exploitation have created most of the suffering and breakdown that now exists, so the billions of tiny actions of compassion, which includes wisdom and skillful means and joy, preserve and heal the situation. Mm-hmm. In fact, David Hawkins, who's an enlightened kind of writer, had this idea or this image that really through our awareness, and I include all of us who are in this picture right now, through our awareness, we are in a sense upholding a huge section of humanity in consciousness. It's almost like we are holding it up for those who can't hold it yet themselves. Or else this whole thing would have fallen apart a long time ago. I was also struck with a quote from the Buddha, which emphasizes the preciousness of life and how life on Earth, or our choice of being here on planet Earth, is not just an open chance that happens to every being. That there's really I wouldn't say a hierarchy so much, but it's the preciousness of it. Here's what he said. The Buddha used to describe the rarity and preciousness of human birth on the wheel of reincarnation. He told of a wooden ox yoke. You can imagine what that's like, wooden ox yoke floating in the ocean. And a tortoise swimming in that same ocean. The likelihood of the tortoise coming to the surface and finding its head within the yoke is similar to the likelihood of our taking a human birth. Can you get the incredible nature of that?
Wow.
So that it's, and that's just really struck me with what I would call the preciousness of this, and how you know, I take it for granted. Mm-hmm. On some level, even a spiritual level, I want this to be done. Mm-hmm. You know, let's finish this mess so I can sit back in my hammock and sip lemonade. right? And you know, don't realize what he was talking about here, the absolute rarity and preciousness of human life and of being here on planet Earth, learning and doing whatever it is we're doing right now. So I'd like to begin on page 112. And this is going to lead into, I found this lesson tonight to be tremendously, well, they're all important. This was very enlightening to me in many ways. So I'm going to begin on page 112, right around the middle of the page. The work has been done in preparation for this, the claim that I am here, that I have come. We will attest to that. Each of you who hears these words must attest to your own response to them. And the realization, the manifestation of this field and these words is the true teaching of the second coming of Christ. You have waited for a man in the clouds. What you have never known is that you are all in the clouds in the upper room. And as you are realized there, you anoint anything that you perceive and can imagine through the consciousness that abides there. The small self, in its life, in its witness, in its agreement to be in form, to be in physical form, is understood and has acquiesced itself to the agreement of embodiment through the stages of realization that are in many ways the requirement for the soul's evolution. These are stages we will discuss as we continue these teachings. But the agreement to embody, that's the Buddha again, the agreement to embody, to be that turtle swimming in the ocean and to come up with that yoke, that not by chance, obviously. The agreement to embody, which is in fact a requirement, aligns the body itself to its possibility for reclamation. And once that has begun, the incremental shifts are to support the individual in her ability to know and maintain the identity of the true self and expression. Nothing gets wasted. This physical existence is not just a joke. It's not just something, in other words, you're not born here to get rid of everything. That would be kind of silly. I get born on planet Earth and I'm here to get rid of everything so I can go back to the one. It's more about blessing and embracing the sacredness of everyone and everything, even our sense of incompleteness, to embracing that and loving that and to allow that energy that might have once been negative, to allow that to transform, to give it to a, that's what the term that this book doesn't describe too often, but come across it in a lot of spiritual work, is the word or the concept of grace. Grace is the transformational power of love. Grace is the transformational power of love, which is available to each one of us, whenever and wherever. And I have to come back for myself here and realize how easily and how quickly I forget that. What's for lunch? Oh, what about so-and-so? Oh, did you hear what so-and-so did? Can you believe it? Yada, yada, yada. I'm off and running.
Gary.
Yeah.
A part of this reading that we just read, it says you wait for a man in the clouds. What you've never known is that you are all in the clouds in the upper room. I just wonder, how can we be in a human body form here and also be in the clouds?
It's tricky.
It sounds, yeah. It doesn't. I know we're already one with God in wherever it is, heaven or wherever, we're already there. And some people say this is a dream or it is an illusion. So I get so confused on how you can be, I don't know, it's not like in two places at one time, but
how can
for
I
me,
be
the
one,
real,
how can I be one and the many at the same time?
Yeah. Yes.
And here's where we come back to, this is not a concept I can grasp with my intellect.
Okay.
Again, it's a reflect for me anyway. And I'm, believe me, I am, as if you haven't found out already, I'm kind of an intellectual guy, right? That's where I live. That's where I spend a lot of my credits, go into my mind, go into my head. But the reality is, and as we said and expressed so many times before, is that each one of us is a unique expression of the divine. Mm-hmm. Is that lens through which the divine light shines through. And we can become more and more aware of that. So I become less, as I become more and more aware of that, I become less attached to making my physical body or my personality or my ego consciousness to make that into a definition of who I am. I realize I have this suit of clothes. Mm-hmm. Nice suit. Well, it's neither nice nor not nice, but this is the space suit that I've chosen to be here on planet Earth. This is my suit of clothes. Right? And eventually what I begin to find out is that when I bless this space suit of mine, when I bless this ego consciousness and personality self that I have spent years creating. I mean, this image of this thing called Jerry Boylan, all right, is the result of years of work, hard work, all right? And once I begin to realize that that's on a deeper level as I can, this is not who I am. However, even though it's not who I am, it is still the, let's call it metaphorically, it is still the lens through which the divine light shines through. So, again, I go back to what the way Ram Dass put it one time. He said, oh, looking at another human being, oh, you're in there. I'm in here. Interesting disguise, right? almost had me fooled, right? In fact, it did have me fooled for maybe 20, 30, 40, 50 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Won't get fooled again. These are stages we will discuss as we continue these teachings. But the agreement to embody that tortoise in the ocean that says, I am willing to put my head through the yoke. I'll find it. The agreement to embody, which is in fact a requirement, aligns the body itself to its possibility for reclamation. In other words, I align myself to higher consciousness so I can bless whatever is in lower consciousness and allow that to, allow that to be blessed, whatever that means to you. As you come to us in questions, why was I born? What am I here for? How do I serve? Who created this mess? We will always tell you the truth. And I know I sent you some stuff probably a year or so ago from Emmanuel's book that kind of answers some of these questions in its own rather unique way. We will always tell you the truth. You have come to be realized. You have come to be renowned, to be the ambassador of truth that sings her song to the world before her. You have all come in remembrance of who you have always been. Ah, in remembrance of who you have always been. Not Jerry or Diane or Margot. Who are you really? And you have claimed it. Align the soul to its true purpose through intention and the ability to sing and to know I have come will be the teaching you receive as we continue in this text, period, period, period. How did John the Baptist put it when he was mimicking Isaiah? He said, I have come to make the crooked ways straight and the rough ways smooth. I've come to, and he was echoing the response. Each one of us has been here to do that for one another. As we walk one another home, as Ram Dass so beautifully said, all right, we are making the rough ways smooth and the crooked ways straight, not only for ourselves. You can't do it just for yourself. We're doing it for ourselves and we're doing it for one another. Can't be otherwise. Now here's the kind of the key of tonight's lesson that is so far above what even metaphysically what I might have imagined even a few years ago. The guides say this. Now, as we teach you the meaning, I have come, we want to announce two things. Get this. The residue of your past actions in many ways is reclaimed in a higher octave through this expression. And that is the rising above karma as you have understood it. The release of the old also requires your accountability for what you chose in a low way, but it may now be met in a high octave, which supports you in recognition and without the consequence that you may have incurred in low vibration. Once the thing is understood and comprehended, it may be reclaimed in a new way. So we are no longer acting through the old, but within the new as expressions of the divine. The rising above karma, as you have understood it. The residue of your past actions in many ways is reclaimed in a higher octave of this expression. In other words, when it's done, it's done. It's cooked. And as the Course in Miracles says, there will come a time when there will be no need for atonement because we will realize our oneness. We realize there's no such thing as guilt. We realize there's no such thing as punishment for doing something wrong. Now, when we realize we have done something that is out of alignment with love or divine consciousness, we might have to make amends for that. We might have to pray for another that I might have harmed. I'm still responsible for the consequences of that. But once I have lifted my awareness up of that, it's done. Don't go back and dig it up again. It's not even something that you have to look at. Well, I'll probably finish that in another lifetime. If you want to hold on to what some spiritual teachers would call karmic debt, you can go ahead and do that. But this is suggesting that if we're willing to work this with our divine consciousness, that karmic debt is erased. It's not there anymore. And so the next time, if there is a next time, you decide to incarnate on planet Earth, if you have done this work well, there will not be anything in your bag that you'd be carrying with you that causes you pain or causes somebody. You will be a clear vessel, just like a little baby would be. You will be a clear vessel for that divine light to shine through. There will be nothing, absolutely nothing, getting in the way of that.
Can you kind of relate this to the... It says the release of the old also requires, the release of the old would have been my being active in my alcoholism. Mm-hmm. Those were my old ways. And today in a higher octave, I don't want to go back.
You don't want to go back, but you can also look at that part of your life as being a blessing. Okay. Whereas, when we first might have looked at it, how did Christofferson say, never know when it believe in is a blessing or a curse, all right? It might have looked pretty dark and pretty horrible and say, why the hell did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
But after a certain amount of time in recovery, we look back on that and say, my God, you know, I never would have gotten to this spiritual place that I'm at right now if it had not been for that loss, that addiction, that losing a job, that whatever, divorce, whatever might happen to be. So we are holding it very, very differently than we might have in the past.
In the old way, Jerry, I had a lot of guilt and shame. Mm-hmm. And in the higher octave, I don't see that anymore.
It's because not there anymore.
Well, it's a miracle. It's a blessing.
It is a blessing.
In a higher octave. I'm so thankful to see it that way. They said there's no such thing as guilt.
Unless you want it.
I don't want to. No. Who wants that?
I can't remember which book of the Old Testament this is from. It's probably Isaiah, but I'm not sure. It's Yahweh speaking to Isaiah saying, although your sins be as red as scarlet, I will make them as white as snow. I will take the energy that you might think of as being negative, as being rotten, as being terrible, as being awful, and I will transform that. We have a wonderful model in our current spirituality for that whole process of transformation. That's what we're talking about here. Letting go of guilt, letting go of fear. We sometimes refer to it as the St. Francis prayer. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. And on and on and on. So it's not about, oh, this hatred, we need to get rid of that. Don't even say that. It says, allow the energy of hatred that I might be holding on inside of me, allow that to be transformed through my divine consciousness into the energy of love. Because I know that can happen. I know that in divine consciousness, that transformation can take place.
Like a rebirth, being reborn.
So again, we're not getting rid of something. I say, oh, that's bad. You shouldn't have that. Saying, yep, I got it. I've got fear. I've got hatred. I've got violence. I've got craziness. I've got all of that stuff. And I am willing to allow that to be transformed through the divine consciousness that I am. And once I become willing to allow that, it happens. It can't not happen. And what this is saying is that even stuff that carries a lot of weight, things that we might have done or not done, even those things can be released, forgiven, let go of. When Jesus was working with, the story is called in the Gospels, the woman taken in adultery. The Pharisees somehow grabbed this poor old woman, well, she wasn't old probably, this poor woman, brought her in front of Jesus and said, you know, we caught her. I often wonder who they catch her with. Because she's the only one that paid the price. Right? We caught this woman in adultery, right? And it's our law says that she needs to be stoned to death. What do you say? And the way the story goes is Jesus didn't even answer him verbally, just started writing in the sand. And it's supposed that he was writing down the sins of all the Pharisees that were standing around. Didn't have to point out, he just said, you know, you're a liar, you're an adulterer, you're this, you're that. And what happened was that the whole crowd dispersed. They just went away. Didn't accuse anybody of anything, just started writing in the sand. And he looked at the woman, he said, does anyone accuse you? And she said, no one, Lord. And he said, go your way and sin. Let go. Let go of the image of who you think you are, who you thought you were, of the label that anybody else has put on you. Release that. You don't have to carry that any longer. It's not who you are. Once a thing is understood and comprehended, it may be reclaimed in a new way. Just what we were talking about with Diane, let's say with the idea of an addiction, which I know some of us can relate to, all of us probably in some ways. All right. So I look at that as being a painful part of my life, maybe a bad part of my life, maybe a very limited part of my life. And then all of a sudden, when it flips over in my mind, I realize, wow, from what I thought was something that was really, really terrible, turns out to be one of the most powerful blessings in my life. Once a thing is understood and comprehended, it may be reclaimed in a new way. In other words, I will see this differently. If I could see peace instead of this. Mm-hmm. Once a thing is understood and comprehended, it may be reclaimed in a new way. So we are no longer acting through the old, but within the new as expressions of the divine. Acting through the old is an expression through my limited self, the self that I think I am, that ego and personality, essence of who we think we are. When that is changed, when I am no longer acting through the old image, the old form, but within the new as expressions of the divine. The other thing we wish you to know of, the consequence of this expression is that the mandate of the Christ, the higher consciousness, in expression, is always truth. Is always truth. It can never reconcile a lie with the need for the lie. The lie itself must be re-seen, known anew, and claimed in truth for the lie to be known in a new way. Let me transform whatever is dishonest within myself, whatever is holding on to my shadow, whatever I think is real but's not real, whatever bullshit I've told myself about myself, or whatever crap I've taken in that other people have told me about me, that I not only have I grown to believe it, I've grown to accept it as being true. Mm-hmm. We've all got caught up in that one. The lie itself must be re-seen, known anew, and claimed in truth for the lie to be known in a new way. In other words, I have to accept it as being a piece of dishonesty in order for it to change. If I still believe it's true, it's not going to transform. Okay. If the energy is just good, it's going to sit there. So it's a little bit challenging in some ways. Look at all of the things. All of the untruths that I have held on to or identified myself with. And every one of them is in the way of me claiming my divine inheritance. So like the prodigal son, what he thought was, what's important to me right now is, let's eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. I want to really enjoy myself. Because that's the most important thing in life. And thinking that's the truth. And that whole dream gets squashed when all his money's gone and the country that he's in goes into poverty. And then he gets into another lie without realizing it too much. He said he's feeding the pigs bean pods, and he wishes he had some bean pods to feed himself with. He said. And then he says to himself, even the servants in my father's home have better food and better clothes than I do right now. I will go to my father. And he has this little prepared speech. Father, I have sinned against you and against God, blah, 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 blah. The father sees him trudging up the road and runs down the hill to meet his son. And he starts spieling off this little speech of his, Father, I've sinned against you and against God. And his father says, I don't have none of that. That's not true. Nothing has interfered with my love for you, nor will it ever interfere with my love for you. And to show that that's true, we'll change the externals, but you're the one who's going to have to change the internals. We'll get a new robe to put on you. We'll get a ring to put on your finger. We will kill the fatted calf as a celebration for your coming home. But you're the one who's going to need to accept that as being true. Because if you don't, you're going to be right in the same mess you were before.
Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
It says the lie itself must be re-seen, known anew. And it wasn't until I did quit drinking and was not active in the disease that I was able to see what a lie my disease was.
Mm-hmm.
It lied to me the whole time.
Right.
Take a drink and you'll feel better. You know, drink, do this. Always trying to numb my feelings. It lied to me all the time. It didn't work. And when I did see things new, I saw that for a lie.
Mm-hmm.
It was all a lie.
Right.
It was my, what do you call that? What's that word? Projecting.
Okay.
It was all, wasn't even true. That was not me.
That's a great
example. That's not who I really am.
It's a really good example of that, of how, I wouldn't say how easy it is, but how we can slip into that mindset of dishonesty or limitation. Making something important that really isn't terribly important, but which sort of wraps up the world that I live in, or seems to define the world that I live in. Now, this is not at all comfortable for the aspect of self that has built a life upon lies, a belief in what was important, what should be done, what must be done through the dictates of others and inherited systems of laws. All of us, again, I love this example from Ram Dass. He said, you know, as soon as we're born, we go into people training. People start telling us who we are. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate thing is everybody who's telling us who we are, they don't know who they are. Now, they don't know any better, so they're feeding us the same lies that they were fed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're taking them in because, I don't know about you, as a kid, I had no other place to go. I figured, well, they must be telling me the truth. You know, the church says, oh, Lord, I am not worthy. Well, it must be true. I mean, we ask the priest, I'm worthy. Well, no, you're not. You're a bad boy.
Mm-hmm.
You're a bad girl. Now, I realize looking back that my parents weren't mean people, weren't trying to lie to me consciously. What they were saying was, you know, you did something that I find unacceptable, but that really doesn't interfere with how much I love you. But they didn't have the words for that. We have a vocabulary. That's one of the ways that the human race has grown from one generation to the next, is we have a vocabulary now for our children and our grandchildren. And we can, instead of saying you're a bad boy, you're a bad girl, which was our kind of our limitation, which we were taught from our parents, we can say, you know what, I don't agree with what you did. I don't like what you did, or what you did is not terribly acceptable to me, but that has nothing to do with how much I love you. Can you imagine what a difference that would have made? And see, that's an indication of the growth that has happened in our racial consciousness. That choice was not there 20, 30, 40 years ago. It's here right now. And it is, obviously, it is extremely powerful.
Mm-hmm. It is.
But as it said, this is not at all comfortable for the aspect of self that has built a life upon lies, mm-hmm. a belief of what was important, what should be done, or what must be done through the dictates of others or inherited systems of lies. Systems of lies that come through our educational system,
mm-hmm.
religious teaching. our heritage, our culture. As you choose again and again to align in the upper room, which is the place of being of truth, you commence a life in accordance to truth. And that life will bring you what you require. Any encounter you have with the old and the creations of fear must now be known as opportunity to be renown, free of the things you have served in idolatry or fear. And it uses that word idolatry. You have made something into a god for yourself that controls your life, that doesn't have to. But what you have done is you have given your power away to some person, place, or thing in your life. And now is your time to reclaim that, to get it back. If I'm still hearing my parents' voice in my head and I'm still buying into that, I need to reclaim what is true and release that. Say, to my mom and dad who are no longer physically present, I know you did the best you could do. I forgive you, but I release the message that I learned from you because I know now it is not true. It hurt like hell, and I wish it hadn't happened that way. I wish you knew better. I wish I knew better, but I didn't, and you didn't either. But now what I'm doing is I'm asking for the grace to be able to let that go, to forgive, to release. As you choose again and again to align in the upper room, which is the place of being of truth, you commence a life in accordance to truth, and that life will bring you what you require. In other words, you'll still be attracting lessons to yourself to learn from. Any encounter you have with the old and the creations of fear must now be known as opportunity to be renown. Free of the things that you have served in idolatry or fear. Whatever you've given your power away to. Whatever you've given your identity over to. Now, the divine is what you are. There's that phrase again. The divine is you. The divine is what you are, which simply means the manifestation of the divine in physical form. You. The words that they use quite often, form means the physical body, and field means the energy that is part of that physical body and also part of your creative action. In form and field, can contribute to change as expression of the Christ once you understand that the being at this level of consequence simply acts as the one who knows who he is, expresses the vibration of being. The idea that you have been called to a great act in some ways is true. But the great act is the transformation of being into the high octave as the expression of the divine that can now be known with manifestation. How did Mother Teresa put it so beautifully? Not all of us are called to do great things. We are called to do little things with great love. And anything, whether it's cleaning the house, going grocery shopping, tying your shoes, reading a book, playing a piece of music, doing a dance, walking through nature, anything can be transformed into an act of love. Walking up and down the stairs. It's not about getting there. It's about being there. The great act is the transformation, that Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. The transformation of being into the high octave as the expression of the divine can now be known with manifestation. What this means is any idea you have held of what it means to be the manifest divine, old idea, is replaced completely in the comprehension of being it. In other words, it's not about the words that describe what it is. You are it. As we said on, I think we did this on Sunday or some other time, was this reporter asked Gandhi, you know, what's your message? He wrote it down on a piece of paper and flipped it into the reporter that was running after the train. He said, my life is my message. What's your message? My life is my message. You don't question things about the self when they say they are known or realized, nor do you strive to be what you already are. And the consequence of being, the manifestation of the divine as expressed by you, is the choice to become the acknowledged one, the articulated one, who calls the echo of his vibration into the world to move into like vibration with all it knows and sees. You're doing that right now. You are attracting to yourself like beings who are growing and expanding and stretching and becoming just like you are. And maybe a year ago, maybe a couple of years ago, we might not have attracted one another to ourselves, but here we are. And so it's really simple to look at the faces on the screen and to realize that, oh, I'm in here. You're in there. And even though the outside, the physical body, the form and the form might be different, that the essence of who you are, an expression, a unique expression of the divine, goes past the disguises that we wear, goes past whatever we might be seeing or looking at, whatever we might have taught ourselves or believed about who we are or who we were in the past. Yes. You don't question, I remember when you said, don't question things. Years ago, when I first got involved in this work, I was living in Columbus, Indiana. And there was a treatment center there that I was working at. And I came in contact with some people who were, one was a psychic, her name was Carol Bridges, who did readings for people. And I had just been through an experience of meeting one of my inner guides. It was a meditation that was going around at that particular time called the inner guide meditation. And actually, the more I work with that, there were two guides that showed up. One was named Zachary and the other one was named Ray. And they would talk to me. They would give me information. They would be part of my meditation, part of my prayer life. It didn't feel like anything out of the ordinary. I figured maybe everybody does that, but it was the first time it really became real for me. And I remember one time doing a session with Carol, psychic session. And since I am so intellectually grounded, and I need proof for practically everything. And I remember asking Carol, I said, well, she was in her trance state. I said, are Ray and Zachary my real inner guides? And she was very quiet for a moment. And then she said, I'll never forget this. She said, you shouldn't ask a question they already know the answer to. In other words, you already know the answer to that in your heart. You might not know it in your head, but don't try not to be convinced that way. Okay. What this means is any idea that you have held of what it means to be the manifest divine is replaced. In other words, all your old thinking, no matter how real or how good or how true you think it is, let it go. Make room for what's real. Is replaced completely in comprehension of being it. You're not thinking it, you are being it. Difference between saying I love you and loving you. One's an intellectual concept, nice one, but it's very different from being that. On one side, it's, well, I already know that I am a reflection of divine spirit. I am a unique expression of the divine. I already know that. It's saying, forget about that one. Open yourself up to being it. My life is my message. Let me just finish this paragraph and then we'll do our meditation. The decibel you operate at as the Christ itself actually lifts in totality and resonance what it encounters. And the ramification of this means that everything you see and encounter must be understood in a new way. Everything you see and encounter must be understood in a new way. So a very easy way to work with that one is when you come up face to face with someone or something that, let's say, is eating your lunch, of asking yourself the question, what is this here to teach me? What can I learn from this? What is it speaking to me as? What does it have to tell me? How is it stretching me? How is it coming to me to be a point of growth in my life? With everything. So, excuse me, I'm going to suggest you put your stuff down. Just get comfortable. And close your eyes. This lesson tonight was fairly loaded. And maybe a simple way of realizing that is as you tune in to yourself, to your own vibrational energy at this moment, that you realize that you know that it is different from what it was 45 minutes ago. Without forcing anything to happen, without any shoulds or coulds, I have allowed myself to enter into a higher octave, a higher vibration of resonance, a higher vibration of understanding. Let that be. I become more and more aware of my vibration as a unique expression of the divine. which is constantly growing, stretching, and evolving. There are no limits. There are no limits to unconditional love. There are no limits to my being. And anything I bump into or run into or which runs into me can be looked upon as a lesson. But even more than that, I can become aware that this person, this situation, this memory, this idea is also being asked to be transformed by the power of unconditional love. Beyond my understanding, beyond my understanding. Even beyond what we sometimes refer to as gratitude. That my heart is open to everyone and everything. That I realize in a deeper way the preciousness of this earthly existence. I realize that what I have looked upon as being a struggle is a blessing. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is fear, let there be compassion. Where there is anger, let there be peacefulness. Where there is not enoughness, let me rest in divine love. Where there is judgment, let me realize on the deepest level available to me that we are all one. Breathe all that in. And stretch a bit and open your eyes when you're ready. Next week will be our last class for a while. We're going to take July and August off. We'll be renewing our contract, if you want to call it that, Tuesday after Labor Day. So I'll try and remember to remind you all of that as well. Hope you have a great week. Thanks for being
here.
Thanks, Jerry. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Welcome. Peace.